I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
There are a few things I look forward to every week, Scott Johnson. A morning cup of coffee, having a lie-in on the weekends, as the Brits say. But one of those things is Current Geek, making the weekend start right.
Oh, well, all right then. Can I ask you a question about the lie-in real fast?
Sure.
Do you, like me, feel a little guilty when you get a nap? Or do you not, or do you just embrace it and take it because
when I get a nap?
Yeah, when you take like
sleeping in.
Yeah, sleeping in, napping, any of those things. Like any of the sort of like, you know.
I definitely have some Catholic guilt around napping.
You can thank your parents for that. It's
shouldn't you be working? Sleeping your life away.
It's good to be here, of course. Very excited. And we have a couple of great guests with us. Let's start with Jason Robbins. He is at helpthemonsters.com. Got a fantastic new Kickstarter starting with that. He is on the show with us today. Jason, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've been waiting on this all week. This is just the best week topper I could ask for.
Well, great. I hope we live up to the hype that we have laid out before this and that you have a great time with us. It's really good to have you. Now, later on the show, I want to hear a little bit about what you got cooking over there at helpthemonsters.com.
Nice. Thank you.
Also with us, one of the great minds working at 1Password, specifically the lead developer on the 1Password for iOS app, one of my favorite apps on my phone. Welcome to the show, Michael Fay.
Thank you for having me, guys. This is very cool. It's a little strange to hear the intro and not just be folding laundry, you know, while I listen. So
it's usually a much more relaxing experience to listen to the show when you're not on it. Has been my experience.
But, well, and Michael's just big time in all of us because he not only is coming on the show, but he's coming on the show from a boat.
Yeah, you're on a boat, and you've been on a boat for about a week, and you have better internet than a lot of people at home do. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it's been pretty fantastic. But also, if it just cuts out, I'm on a boat. So there you go.
Yeah.
Right. You win. You win either way.
Plausible deniability throughout.
We had Justin Robert Young on Daily Tech News Show from Iowa, and we could barely squeeze out two bits. Mm-hmm. To get him to talk to us. We should have had him on a boat.
Yeah. Why not? Sure. Don't put jury.
I don't know where you'd put it, Iowa, but
jury on a boat is trouble. That's all I got to say. Well, we're going to dive right in. We got some headlines. We got some stuff to talk about. Why it's Current Geek, in fact. And here is our intro.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, break it down.
Stephen Moffat. It will direct one more 12-episode season of Doctor Who, which will not air this year. They'll put the Christmas special on at the end of 2016 on Christmas Day, but the rest of the season will air in spring 2017, after which Mr. Moffat will be succeeded by the writer of Broadchurch, a series starring David Tennant. Chris Chibnall will become the new Doctor Who showrunner.
How come I thought... When I heard about this, I guess I didn't get the full skinny. I thought this was after the 2016 season he was out. And I guess technically that's still sort of true depending on when they film this. But I didn't know we'd get episodes from him as showrunner all the way through spring of 2017.
Yeah, you get no episodes this year.
Yeah.
Except for the Christmas special. And then you get the last Moffat episodes in 2017. And the reason they said was, we want to bring the nation together at a time when there isn't anything else on the BBC. Mm. Basically, the Olympics and all kinds of stuff this year are going to be competitive to anything they put on the air. So they figured, well, Moffat's last season, that'll be a draw. We'll put that on in a blank space. So, yeah, we're going to have to wait a year for that.
And this isn't the only time in the history, before I throw this to the guests, this isn't the only time in the history of Doctor Who where we've had a season with no Doctor Who, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously there were plenty of years that there were no Doctor Who's being made in the 1990s. And even since the restart, they've had kind of an odd off again, on again schedule where they've shifted things around. They tend not to stick to that fall spring rhythm that we have here in the United States or used to have. They just kind of mess with stuff and plot it everywhere. So yeah, it's not unheard of.
Yeah. Well, Jason, any thoughts? Are you a fan, Doctor Who fan?
Oh, I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I'm not really a huge Peter Capaldi fan. I think that the writers have really failed him as far as he makes a good doctor, but just the stories around him haven't been all that great. But I'm excited for this. And I honestly think that the next doctor should be a female, but that's me.
I'd be all right with that. That's cool. Maybe now's the time. Maybe they got this time to breathe a little bit. They got the Olympics all up in everyone's face. They can slow down.
Well, just to be clear, we're not getting rid of Peter Capaldi quite yet.
Oh, is he the season? So he's for 2017. He's still with us.
He's definitely in for 2017. He might stick around for Chris Chibnall's takeover as well.
What
I've read some articles where he's probably going to be leaving when Stephen Moffat leaves.
Oh, he wants out. That's when?
Yeah, there are people saying that, but yes. That none of that is confirmed.
No confirmation yet. Michael, thoughts on the any of this Doctor Who-ness?
You know, I have to go tear a corner off my geek card. I'm not a Whovian.
Yes!
I think I used that correctly.
There's two of us on the show today. Two of us who don't watch Doctor Who. It's not that I don't like it. I just haven't gotten around to it. What's your excuse?
So I tried watching a few episodes, I think when it was Eccleston back in the day, and it just didn't grab me, and I never got back to it. But I recognize that there's a ton of people that love it, and that's awesome, and they should love it. I just it's not something that's really grabbed me yet.
Yeah.
But I will say that I just hope that Stephen Moffat continues to be involved with Sherlock, because that's been awesome, and that's one of my favorite series.
Oh, well, good. Yes. There's no talk about that, is there, Tom? That he wouldn't have a direct hand in the future of the Sherlock business, right?
No, in fact, there's some, again, speculation. These are just rumors that maybe this will free him up to do more than three episodes at a time, or at least bring Sherlock back more regularly. But of course, it's not just him; it's Cumberbatch and Hobbit.
The Hobbit there, Jim Bob McCree.
Scott, every time you do this, I lose the name.
Same here.
I can't think of it now.
You play along at home with that.
We love that guy too. He's Arthur Dent in freaking
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. I almost said Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. Oh, Morgan Freeman replacing Martin Freeman on Sherlock would be quite interesting.
Actually, listen, I've got an idea that fixes all of this. Who played the Queen in The Queen? The British actress. Can't think of her name all of a sudden. She's a very popular.
Jane Duty Jones.
No, yeah. different one. The other one.
Helen Mirren?
Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren takes over from Capaldi as the Doctor. All right? There's your first solution.
Wait, I know you said, like, you're not a big Capaldi fan, so I get why it's like, well, maybe Capaldi will leave too. I'd love to have a new Doctor.
Yeah.
I can't stress enough. No one said anything about
that. Right. No, I don't want to. I don't want to.
Like, poor Chris Chibnall.
That was my fault.
Everyone's no. You're not. You're far from alone. Like, they're like, we have a new showrunner. It's Chris Chibnall, and everyone writes, who will take place of Peter Capaldi? Like, and Chris Chibnall's over, like, hey guys, I'm actually going to be taking over the show. Do you want to talk to me? Yeah. And everyone's like, no, you wrote dinosaurs on a spaceship. We don't want to talk.
Did he really do that? Oh yeah, I guess he did. But okay, so let's just say that Capaldi wants out. I'm just saying, in a world where Capaldi wants out, then you bring in her. Okay, she's your new Doctor. Then you launch a U.S. version of Doctor Who, and back to Morgan Freeman. He plays the Doctor.
I see where you're going.
What a great Doctor he would be, don't you think? I believe it was I crawled
first to American Doctor. That would be awesome.
I would be all into that. Anyway.
Except the BBC would never do that. No. They're always going to be British.
I want to see Hayley Atwell.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Same time.
Yes.
Jinx.
One mind.
Nicely done, guys.
That's absolutely
good. Nice.
Hey, Torrent Freak has done a little digital archaeology and identified the world's oldest known torrent, which delivers an ASCII version of the Matrix movie. The torrent was created December 20th, 2003. The original site it was posted on and linked to from is no longer even online, but the torrent keeps having enough seeders and enough people using it to stay alive.
So how is it a version of the movie? I don't get it. Is it all in ASCII code and it makes up some sort of AVI?
Well, it's just a video, but they reproduce the movie in ASCII.
Oh, all right. So
it's an ASCII animation.
I've seen this before then, where somebody takes a movie. In fact, there's apps that do this where they...
Totally.
Convert your video into like a bunch of ASCII characters. That's actually kind of rad that's the longest existing torrent. I would have suspected something more like a song, like an MP3, or I don't know. I'm trying to think of what some of the earlier torrent stuff was, but
yeah, like an album or some. I guess Linux distros get out of date because you want to get the latest version, so they wouldn't last very long.
Do you guys ever worry? So, Michael, I'll ask you this. Do you ever worry, as a guy that works in, you know, the digital world, that we're going to, some of these things are going to be lost to time. Like, I'm actually glad somebody was thinking about this and said, oh, maybe we should at least preserve the knowledge that this is the oldest, you know, functioning torrent, and we need to write that down someplace and keep track of it, because we're now entering, I feel like, that phase in digital life where stuff's starting to age out. And as it does, you know, we can't play Madden 2002 on their servers anymore. That game's useless, basically. We can't, you know, play the original Warcraft unless someone cheats and has a fake, you know, a private server. And I'm not trying to just use video games here, but they're hitting that age too, where some of this stuff might start getting lost to time because nobody cares anymore.
Is that something you worry about? It's, you know, digital data is so ephemeral in general. Like, it really has an expiration date. And I was actually surprised to hear that torrents kind of die out. I almost figured that something like archive.org would be grabbing onto torrents and sort of maintaining their life, quote unquote, indefinitely. Mm. But yeah, I think that digital archiving in general is like it's a real problem. And it's not just things online, but you look at like Pixar, for instance. They've got, you know, some of their older movies are stored in a certain format that's only compatible with certain computers. And then they've got to figure out how to get those, you know, they've got to make sure they've got those olders around to bring them forward in their format and stuff. Mm. And
just like when you have slides at home or Super 8 mm-hmm. video or whatever, I guess we're faced with a similar problem.
All that microfilm you have, Scott.
Yeah, I know that microfiche that I've got laying around.
Yep.
I love saying microfiche.
You know, it's a good point about archive.org, because I think that that sheds some light on what's going on here. Archive.org is actually preserving the site that this torrent was originally linked from. Mm. So you can go and look and see what it was like when they originally posted this torrent. And archive.org probably stores a copy of this ASCII movie, but they don't run the torrent tracker. Like, you can actually create a tracker off of any archive.org file. But what's happening here is something a little more ephemeral. This tracker to distribute this particular file has maintained consistency over the course of 13 years, or I guess 12 years, but almost 13 years at the end of this year.
Jason, are you worried about a future where you can't get a hold of your ancient files, but the torrents or something else?
What I'm wondering is who's still downloading the, you know, torrenting the Matrix? I mean,
right? In ASCII.
Who doesn't have, I mean, I think I have a DVD copy that came with the house when we bought it. I mean, you know, everybody has a copy of the Matrix. I mean, it's cool that they're still preserving it, but yeah. Are there still people out there actually torrenting it?
Well, I would be hard pressed to sit down and watch the entirety of the Matrix in ASCII format.
Yeah.
That would really push my limits, but I also love that this exists. So, hey, good on whoever. It's probably people, Tom, who's just forgotten it's being seeded, or they're in on the idea that this is a weird thing and it should stay.
Yeah. Well, it's probably people like, have you seen the ASCII version? No, I haven't seen the ASCII version. You know, obviously I have a copy that came with my house like everybody does. It's so true. It's like legally mandated that everyone have that DVD.
Comes with samples of Tide.
Yeah,
right. That's right.
So, hey, Monero Digital is a company that just owns patents and sues people. Often those are called patent trolls. And in September, Monero Digital filed a suit against 24 manufacturers and retailers demanding royalties be paid for selling USB hubs, which Monero says violates one of their patents. They have a patent that applies to USB hubs. One company that Monero filed a suit against was Rosewill, except Rosewill isn't a company. Rosewill happens to be the house brand for Newegg. And some of you may know this, Newegg famously does not settle with patent trolls. So they don't play the game of, fine, we'll pay you something to leave us alone. They're like, no, we're going to cost you as much money as possible if you sue us for a patent. So one day, after being called by a Newegg representative about the suit, Monero dropped the case, but only against Newegg. They've maintained it against everybody else. And some of these other companies include big companies like Walmart.
Wait a minute. So only thing worse than a patent troll, in my opinion, is a patent troll who, like, is picky because one of them's a tough guy. They just all need to be tough guys then. Walmart just needs to stand up to them and go, we're Walmart, get out of here. And then they'll stop doing it. That's so weird to me. Like, the whole patent troll world, foreign to my brain. Don't understand how it works. These aren't the same people that are the podcast people, are they?
No, they're not.
Okay, good.
They're the same kind of operation.
I was going to get all worked up. Are they all based in Texas? Because they got some crazy protective laws there.
They all sue in Texas. That's what you're thinking of, because that East Texas court is traditionally very friendly to patent suits.
Michael, any thoughts? You're off the continent right now. You're out in the middle of, well, you're on some port somewhere, but you know, you can say things you normally couldn't.
Sure. Yeah. Cause yeah. So patent trolls are just the worst. And I love that Newegg is there and is like, well, we're not going to give in. And that's, more companies need to do that. The problem is with the smaller guys who are like, we don't have Newegg's nest egg.
That was good.
And so they can't afford to do this. And, I think that there's coalitions and stuff that are starting up to try and provide funding for fighting patent trolls.
To me, it just seems too easy. It seems like you could just say, hey, well, just to use an example of something that's on the table and not to keep digging your company up, but 1Password, they could come to you guys and say, hey, we have a patent that has something to do with
storing strings of numbers in a central repository.
Exactly. And then they could say that. And then maybe for all I know, that may have actually happened and it got squashed. I don't know. But that's my whole point, is that it doesn't even matter. I could do something on the show today that I could claim was cool and everybody had never heard of before, and suddenly I'd get a cease and desist from somebody who thinks they own the patent for that. And I don't know about you guys, but that I'm continually uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Don't like it.
I think the biggest problem is, with most of these patent trolls, when they file a patent, it's just so ambiguous, the wording on whatever it is that they're trying to patent. And I think there needs to be maybe harsher penalties against people who make these frivolous lawsuits.
Yeah, why not like a three strikes and you're out kind of deal? Like you've brought three frivolous lawsuits on a thing that all three were shut down by a judge. So now you owe us all a Coke or whatever. You got to come up with something, right? I don't know if that's severe enough, but you know what I mean.
You can only afford RC after this patent lawsuit.
I mean,
there are new patent rules that actually provide a little more burden if you lose your case. So if you bring a patent lawsuit and then you lose it, you'll have to pay some of the fees of the person you sued. But that's as far as they've gone as changing the system. And I think you hit it on the head. One of the biggest problems is patents. There's so many software patents out there that the patent issuers are overwhelmed and they make mistakes and they issue patents to things that shouldn't be patented. But you have to go to court to get them invalidated. And what these patent trolls do is don't go to court. They get people to settle out of court because they don't want to mess with it or they don't want to pay for it. And that's why what Newegg's doing is so important, to say, no, let's go to court. And that's why it's so telling that Monero said, oh, right, Newegg, no, we don't want to go to court. So we're dropping our case against you.
Interesting. And maybe they just know that companies like Walmart, it is for them, for the small stuff, it is easier just to say, they probably have lawyers set up just to say, here's your all out of court settlement lawyers.
Yeah.
And they just cave because they have the money and the resources.
Walmart,
and they don't
Best
care.
Buy, Amazon are all being sued by Monero. Yeah. And all of those companies just look at it as like an equation and like, well, going to court would cost this much. Settling out of court costs this much. So pay the lesser amount and just settle.
Yeah, it's a cost of doing business. That annoys me to no end. I hate it. But hey, one last question for you, Tom, and then we can move on. You've been covering patent law, copyright, crap like that in the tech world forever, as long as I've known you. Since 2006.
Since the 70s.
Yes, even then. You were the young boy. what has there been? So like when I heard you talking and complaining about it with Molly Wood in 2005, we are now 11 years past that. Has anything really changed since then?
A little bit.
Okay.
There have been a few laws like the one I mentioned put in place to maybe slow things down. The problem is that the people who want this year's patents to not go to court also hold patents on next year's things that they might want to defend. And there's a very good reason to have patents. So the fight is all about, well, how much of software, if any, should be patentable, because it's math at the root of it. And if some of it should be patentable, what should be patentable, and how do we make it so that only things that are truly innovative get patented? But nobody wants to push it too far because they don't want to lose protection for their own inventions.
Makes sense to me. Still sense.
UK filmmaker Charlie Lynn crowdfunded £5,963 to submit a 607-minute film of paint drying to the UK Films Censorship Board, the BBFC, to protest against mandatory classification. There's a flat fee you have to pay to get a film classified in the UK, and then you pay per minute of the film, which is why he made a 607-minute film and why it cost him that much money. But to get a film shown in theaters in the UK, you essentially have to get the BBFC to rate it. Otherwise, the theaters just won't accept it. Tuesday, the BBFC declared that the film was rated U for no material likely to offend or harm.
I believe it's U for uninteresting.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Also, yes. That.
Yeah. I approach this with like 12 questions about a lot of things. Obviously, he's trying to make a point. There's a bit of a protest happening here. He's got some backing for it, and they want to change the way this works. But I've never heard of a U rating, and I didn't know you had to pay to have something rated. When we do the MPAA here, what are we – not MPAA. What's it called?
It's the MPAA.
Yeah, that's it. When they do that, are filmmakers don't have to pay them, do they?
I bet they do.
I wonder how that works here in the
States. But I bet it's not. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually don't know that at all. So maybe they've always have, and I just didn't know it. So I wonder what precedence that sets. But can I go to Britain and sit down, and after I hear a commercial for a video game where it's rated PEGI 18, I'll find out that the movie is rated U? Because that sounds great.
So that's the Classification and Ratings Administration in the U.S. that issues ratings for motion pictures.
Mm. Wow. So it's not even the MPAA then. I don't know. All I know is you can't have a wiener or whatever, and then, or else you get an X rating, or I don't know how it works. This stuff's all very confusing to me. Any thoughts, Michael, as you, again, in international waters, you can make international comments about things that are internationally sensitive. So what do you think?
I'm still not sure that's how that works, but I had the same thing. It's like a lot of questions. What, why, like, can we show movies in the US that aren't rated?
Yeah, can a theater decide that your unrated movie's okay to show there? I don't know. I don't know how that works. I mean, could, if I owned a movie theater and Tom's my friend and he made a movie about, I don't know, fishing, can I just show his movie? Do I have to?
You can.
Okay.
It's that you open yourself up to liability. I think the way it works is that if you get the classification, then somebody can't sue the theater for showing something obscene or indecent. Oh. And so most theaters, just to play it safe, say, look, it better be classified or we're not going to show it.
Right.
And in the U.S., there is a fee to get the voluntary rating, and it's the same sort of deal. Like, if you can point that it was rated, then you've got some liability protection. And you have different classes based on how much money you usually make from your films, and the fees range anywhere from $750 to $25,000.
Wow. All right. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Seems like a yank. Because what are you paying for? Five people to sit in a room?
Someone to sit and watch your movie.
I guess so. I don't know, man. I'd do it for free.
I just can't believe this guy raised $6,000 to film paint.
Well, no, it's more like, what, $9,000, $8,000?
Yeah, whatever the dollar is American now,
yeah.
Dollars.
Yeah, it's bad right now. The whole thing is crazy to me, but maybe I didn't realize there was a problem, I guess. I didn't even know this was a thing. So at the very least, this has brought to light something we knew nothing about.
Well, it's interesting, right? I mean, I can go on YouTube and put my film up. I can go on Vimeo and put my film up and reach more people than ever before.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird time to make this sort of protest.
Yeah.
But I think it's also because of that, I think it's made it more clear, like, wait a minute, if I can just put it up on Vimeo and the whole world can watch it, why do I have to pay you money to sit and watch it, to show it in a theater? That doesn't make any sense.
It's super weird.
Oh, the world's moving that way. It's going to be that way soon.
And the more it does, though, the more these dichotomies pop up. It's like, how is that even a thing? Like, it happens with me now where I may play a piece of content or something on the show or, I don't know, whatever, and then look at the real world sort of old media way of looking at it, and there would have been like 15 levels of approval you'd have to go through, and editors and all kinds of crap, and you don't have to do that anymore. And so for some people it's lawful, for other people it isn't. Like, it's, we're in a weird middle ground right now. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
If you are tired of Marvel movies, I've got bad news for you. If you're excited about more Star Wars movies, I've got good news for you. Disney chairman Bob Iger told the BBC that there are 5 Star Wars films, 4 more with Episode 7, The Force Awakens, that are in varying stages of development and production. There will be more after that. I don't know how many. I don't know how often. And when asked whether he thought people were tired of Marvel movies, Bob said, no, I don't think they're getting weary, but I think we keep raising the bar in terms of telling stories that bring them back, that excite them, that make it feel new, and that is what we do for a living.
Well, that sounds like the company line. However, I think it's fine. I think there's a tendency in the hearts of nerds to want to start feeling like something's getting overdone, but, you know, outside of Age of Ultron, I don't feel like Marvel has spent their best work yet. I think there's plenty of cool stuff to come. I don't want them to slow that stuff down. We said last week about Star Wars, I'm glad that they bumped episode 9 a little bit of time, because I feel
episode
like
episode 8.
Or 8, rather. Yeah, I keep thinking of the new one as 8, but Rogue One, this coming holiday. And then you were immediately...
Calling Rogue One Rogue Squadron. Oh, so, yeah.
It's a good video game. But anyway...
Love that game.
And it was also a book series, right? Wasn't Rogue Squadron a book?
Oh, it might have been.
I don't remember. That stuff falls a race now, so it doesn't matter. But point is, you know, I trust them. So far, they've not really screwed us over. And I don't really worry about it. I mean, when they start to be bad, then they'll be bad, you know? And when they continue to be good, we'll keep going. If they're good... He's totally right. As long as these stories stay good and compelling... We'll just keep going. Jason, you're about to make a short film. Or you're already making it, I guess. Right?
Well, not yet. Yeah. We got to make the money first.
Yeah, you got to get that dough. But you know, I mean, they seem to be... I mean, you've got to be a fan. If you guys are making films, you guys got to be a fan of what's happening right now. The nerds rule the world. It doesn't feel like they can do any wrong.
Give me all the Star Wars, as much as you can give me. Give it all to me. Even if there's a bad Star Wars movie in there, it's kind of like pizza. Even bad pizza is still pretty good. You know, the prequels were bad, but I'll still watch them occasionally. Yeah. You know, but, they could give me a Star Wars movie every week, and I would be in that theater watching it.
Star Wars, episode 35, The First Midichlorian.
But I'd be all right with, if they're going to... If they're going to slow the movie production part of it down, I'm okay with that as long as we are getting really great animation stuff. They're doing really good with Star Wars Rebels.
Yep.
That's good. People are digging that. Give us some actual live action TV projects. That would be awesome. You know, don't limit it just to films. That's where I'd like to see them go. I don't necessarily mean slow down doing movies, but, you know, let's spread that stuff around. Let's have a series that everybody must see every week. On some, you know, on some channel, and make that really compelling. That's where I hope I see them go next. Any additional thoughts there, Michael?
I chuckled a little bit when I read this because it almost seemed like a non-news story. Like, yes, we're going to continue making things that people like.
Yeah, it is. It is. Bob Iger says, as long as we can make money off these things, we will keep making these things.
Yeah,
right.
It's funny which shouldn't be surprising. I guess what hit me when he was saying this quote about Marvel. Because a lot of people have been talking like, how long can it go on? Eventually it's going to burn out. And then I realized everyone was saying that about comics in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have new Superman comics coming out, mm-hmm. getting close to 100 years later.
Yeah. You could argue, though, that it's not what it once was. I mean, you could make the argument that comics haven't seen their glory days since the early 90s.
But it's a different argument to say they'll stop making them versus they'll go through a period where they won't be as good. They'll never be as good as the first ones and mm-hmm. all of that.
Yeah, or they won't go as, you know, they won't go as big as Avengers, or they may tell smaller stories. I totally agree with that. And of course he's going to answer it this way. Like, when people ask questions of executives with successful things like this about this sort of thing, I just roll my eyes because it's like, well, yeah, no, they'll make it until it doesn't make money. What do you think they're doing over there?
Yeah.
So
And Star Wars is unique, right? Marvel is making movies based on another property. Star Wars is the property. We're seeing the birth of the DC universe here.
Yeah.
Like the equivalent of Superman and Batman and all these comics coming out in the 30s, 40s, and 50s and creating a universe that they all live in. We're seeing that happen in front of our eyes.
Yeah. And we're not, it's funny because we don't think of it that way, but you're dead on. And I hope that translates to, like I say, a lot of diversity in the Star Wars world, and not just, you know, various versions of episode 4 told over and over and over.
Ooh. Now, if you are traveling to Amsterdam, there are a lot of things outside of your hotel room that can entertain you.
Mm.
But if you don't want to go outside, the Arcade Hotel has opened in the De Pip area. Each of the 36 rooms in the hotel comes with consoles and games. There are also handheld consoles available if you wander down into the lobby or hotel bar. And the hotel also features a comic book library. They also have a fleet of bicycles if you really do want to leave.
What's the I mean, do you guys remember mid-90s, you could go to a hotel and they'd have like an N64 plugged into a Marriott TV? That was like some,
yes.
That was a big deal for a while. And then they quit doing that. I don't know what the arrangement was, but boy, they sure are catering to us, I suppose. I guess that's
well, theme hotels are a big deal now. I stayed in a hotel in Seattle for work one time that gave you a record player, and they had a record library. You could go and check out vinyl, you know, and it was a music themed hotel. So I think this is just another spin off that, except for gamers.
I like it. I go to a hotel. Here's what I do when I go to a hotel, especially if it's an expensive one. I get frustrated when it's a trip where I'm not spending much time there. It's not that I want to spend all my time in a hotel, but I feel like I want to get my money's worth out of it. So I leave the TV on. This is all very bad eco advice, but like I'll leave it blaring while we go out or all whatever, because I'm thinking, yeah.
Plug in the hairdryer and just let it go.
I mean, I got to get my money out of this. So I'll use the tub to its fullest. I'll get extra towels if I need them. Like, I like try kind of go crazy. Well, this is kind of nice. You know, I assume this stuff's going to cost me extra. No.
Well, I don't know what the rates are at the hotel.
All right.
But yeah.
Well, there you go then. Do you guys, what do you think, Jason? Maybe free video games on your next hotel visit? Sound all right?
I mean, that'd be cool, but it's not something I'm going to pay extra for. I mean, if I'm on a vacation somewhere, I'm not going to be spending all my time in the hotel room. Yeah. So
especially
what's
Amsterdam.
Really the point?
Yeah. Video games versus pot and legal prostitution. Which way are you going to go?
Oh, I'm going pot. I got a wife.
Well, after a long day of enjoying the delights of Amsterdam, you might want to relax with a comic book or a video game once you get back to the hotel, right?
Yeah, and you sit there going, whoa. Love it.
What is Dutch for sparkles?
I don't know.
Hey, you may have heard on We Have Concerns about Australia's program to catch and send spiders to the Australia Reptile Park to milk for anti-venom. If you haven't, go check out wehaveconcerns.com. It's an excellent episode. A deadly funnel web spider called Big Boy has been dropped off with a leg span of 10 centimeters. Ugh. It's the largest spider ever handed in for venom milking, according to the BBC.
What do you do it? What's the point of it? So you can make a thing that counters the venom? Is that the idea? The anti-venom?
Yeah, in the morning, a lady goes out with a stool, sits down next to this huge spider, and just, you know, milks the venom.
Oh my gosh. I can't think of anything. I've been watching nature documentaries like a fool lately. Just loving this stuff. And the things I've seen, man, I don't want to go near this thing. Not anywhere freaking near it. You see anything weird while you've been in Cozumel or anywhere down there, Michael? Any big bugs?
No, it's been pretty tame. Yeah. We did see a giant lobster today while we were out walking around. But no.
Like a live one, like moving around on the beach?
No, okay. So technically it was half a lobster.
Oh.
And it was on my plate.
Wow. They live for a while after you cut them in half. They just kind of, the upper torso walks around.
Yeah, so no, they milk these things for the anti-venom.
And
they need venom to be able to make the anti-venom.
But where do they milk them from? They've got like
from
just
their little venom tusks.
Venom tusks? Is that a technical term, Tom?
I'm not an entomologist. I don't know.
So I'm wondering, is that like a, you know, is that a minimum wage job to be a venom milker?
I don't know.
You get the benefits with that? I mean, what comes with that?
It's a low paying job, I expect, but there's chance for advancement if you live.
Here's my thinking is they don't pay enough. That's what I'm thinking. Huge thanks, by the way, to all our subreddit submitters. You guys are amazing. We get lots and lots of this stuff from you guys over at currentgeek.reddit.com, if I could talk.
Yeah. Thanks to IDG3, Piscator NF, Megazeus Thor, D Van Diacal, Brian879, and Star Fury Zeta for this week's reports.
Thank you, guys.
Anti-venom milking.
Totally awesome. I have one quick thing to say before we get to the pop quiz, and that is this. If you haven't heard about it, you need to hear about it now. Current Geek has a Crate Joy box. What is that? It's a thing full of nerdy stuff. Things Tom creates, things I create, a bunch of artwork, some writing. There's a calendar in the current one. Those who may have just gotten their boxes are aware of this, with original art and a calendar set in the year 2044 from Tom Merritt and some fine work by Jenny Josephson. Anyway, this is
if you don't know, 2016 has the same date layout as 2044. If you were like, well, wait, I'm going to have to wait till 2040.
Good point. Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. It's entirely usable today. Which is why we did it. You get the first 6 months now. You get another 6-month calendar on that same vein come June or so. lots of things in between, guest submissions, things from us. It all comes to you directly. Just go to frogpants.cratejoy.com and check it out. My favorite bit so far is the little membership card. You get a new one every month for that month, and it's got special art on it, our signatures. You become a true current geeker by going to frogpants.cratejoy.com. Join up, see what you think, and we'll send you some cool stuff, all right?
Secret stories coming.
Ooh, I like secret stories. Tell me a secret story.
America scores and wins.
All right. That music means one thing and one thing only. It is time for the pop quiz. You guys are probably familiar with this. I will run down the rules very quickly. There really aren't very many, except if you get it right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. Tom will score the entire thing, and at the end of all this, they'll say how you two did as compared to one another. Let's start with Michael. You all ready for this?
No.
Oh, yeah.
All right. let's get you going then. Here's your topic. It is Iron Man, the 2008 movie trivia, because awesome. You like that movie a lot.
I do, yeah. In fact, so I was supposed to be on last week, mm-hmm. were it not for the weather event. And I did watch this movie again the night before, you know, sort of studying prep time.
Oh, good.
But I've forgotten everything.
Okay, good. So, good that you watched it again and good that you forgot, because this will make it very interesting. Here's your first question. What country does Tony Stark get ambushed in early in the film?
Afghanistan.
You are correct. Nicely done. I had forgotten, so I'm glad you said that. What is the name of the terrorist group that captures Tony Stark?
The Ten Rings.
Oh, man, you're going to ace this.
Half point speed bonus there.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Tom's scoring is real weird, by the way. What magazine does Christine Everhart write for in the movie? So what magazine does she write for in the film?
Vanity Fair.
You are correct. Ace. Tom, we may have a ringer in today's contest.
Could be a ringer penalty. We'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
What website does Tony Stark say he doesn't want a photo of him and a soldier to be posted on?
He says he doesn't want to see this on the soldier's MySpace page.
Oh, my gosh. You are correct. That was still a thing in 2008 that mattered. After escaping captivity, Tony Stark tells Pepper Potts to schedule a press conference. What does he want to do before this press conference?
He wants burgers, and he specifically shows up with Burger King at the press conference.
You are correct. Technically, it's a cheeseburger, Tom. Judgment?
Another half-point brand identification.
Okay. All right. There you go. Forget about the cheese. What car model could the crew not get to flip over correctly after crashing it into the Ironmonger?
What model?
Yes. What make and model?
Oh, so it was an Audi something
and the
thing.
VIN.
Yep.
Something.
I'm going to say it was an Audi R8, but it wasn't.
You are correct. It was an Audi R8.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was. I meant to say that, and I was right. Yeah.
You also get a 3/4 point dumb luck bonus.
All right. Second to last question. What is the name of the character that helps Tony survive in captivity and helps build the first Iron Man suit?
That's Professor Yinsen, which says, I met you a few years ago at a conference in Bern.
Yeah.
And then you see that in Iron Man 3.
Man,
I just lost a half point for showing off.
Damn it.
Showing off bonus or deduction. All right. Final question. Christine Everhart says Tony has been called the Da Vinci of our time. She says he also has another nickname. What other nickname does she mention?
The Merchant of Death.
Man, I don't know if we've ever had such a solid performance. But Tom scores it in ways you may not expect. So Tom, hold on to your thing there while I switch on over to Jason.
You mean the scores?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Should have probably been more specific. Jason, are you ready for your questions?
I'm ready.
All right, we're going back in time for this one. Let's go back to 1991, 92-ish. That's Terminator 2 trivia. Your favorite nerd film, or film at all, right?
I got my flannel on.
One of my top films.
One of your top films ever.
Empire Strikes Back.
All right, here goes then. What company made the computer terminal John Connor uses to hack into the ATM and the Cyberdyne vault in the movie?
Atari.
Oh, you know what? You're right. And if you just said Atari portfolio, you would have maybe gotten bonus points, but I barely remember that dumb thing.
You get a 1/4 point having to put up with Scott mocking your answer.
All right, next up, what Dwight Yoakam song plays when the Terminator enters a biker bar in the beginning of the movie?
guitars and Cadillacs.
Well done, jeez Louise.
You know, you get a half point singing bonus, but then you lose a half point for singing. It's a weird juxtaposition.
Now. Yeah, it has to do with delivery, I think. Max is the name of John's dog. What fake dog name does the Terminator use to determine if John's foster mom is the T-1000?
Wolfie.
Oh, man, you're killing it, too. Wolfie.
Speed bonus. Half point speed bonus there.
Yeah. Parents are long dead after that. All right, next one. In the mental institution, a guard gets a cup of coffee from a vending machine. What poker hand is on his paper coffee cup?
Full house.
Oh, man. Hold on.
Oh, my God.
Killing it,
that's
dude.
A full point. I can't believe you didn't even pause. I got that right, bonus.
Yeah, that's incredible. Full point bonus. All right, next one. What is the name of the mall in the film?
The Galleria.
You are correct. It's actually the Sherman Oaks Galleria, and it's been used in various films, that being one of them. But that was the name. What does Sarah Connor threaten to inject into Peter Silberman when she is trying to escape the mental institution?
It's some sort of cleaning fluid. I don't remember her saying what it was.
You are correct about what it is. It has an actual name. Tom, I need a judgment. Is that good enough?
What's the actual name?
Liquid Rooter.
All right, he's going to get a half point then.
All right, half point.
Half point for substance identification.
All right, I like it. Final two questions. This is your second to last. What is the name of Sarah Connor's friend who has her weapons cache in the desert?
Enrique.
Oh my gosh, you're killing it. Final question. By the way, this hasn't happened yet. I just want everyone to know. You guys are the best quizzers we've ever had. All right, final question. What fast food restaurant has a tie-in with the film?
Burger King?
You are incorrect. Oh, it is Subway.
You jinxed him.
I know I did. I feel like I did. Subway is the correct answer. They were the only one to have a deal. Yeah, they had a tie-in.
I don't remember that at all.
I know, which is weird, right? I was thinking Burger King from the Iron Man thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So those are your questions. Tom's got the scores. How did they do?
We almost had a tie, Scott. Jason with 8.25, Michael with 9.25. Wow. Congratulations,
Tom. Wow.
Way to go. That point bonus thing kept you in the running there. Good. Nice job, guys. That was insane. I don't know that it's ever been quite that close.
No kidding. I thought we were going to have a tie.
Yeah. Well, let's look to the future then.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Does it? It's more startling things than you can imagine. It's a thing called forecast. It's spelled like four, like the number, because four of us are here. And we're all going to sort of think about what the future's like in technology or whatever. We got one from Michael last week, and then he got stuck in that horrible snowstorm and couldn't be on the show. But we kept his, and we're dying to know what it is. So, Michael, lay it out for us. What's your prediction?
Sure. So my prediction is that in the next 10 years or so, we're going to see almost a Moore's-like advance in 3D printing technology, where 3D printers are just going to become better and better at printing different materials and different things, to the point where toy manufacturers could just sell plans. And you could download plans and print your own toys at home, and they will come out as good as they do when you buy them in the store, and they'll even have that new toy smell.
I think you're right. Here's my question, though. Does this impact those toy manufacturers, for example, as one of the examples? Like, will the fact that people still want, for example, they want, I don't know, a real Barbie, right? Because it's got cachet, it's the brand, it's this thing that's been around forever.
Actually, Barbie's sales figures have been falling.
Yeah, they haven't been great. She's a bad
And they
example.
Just came out with three new body types of Barbie.
Okay, let's say Kenner, okay? Star Wars action figures, let's say. Are they still doing it? I don't even know if
no,
they are.
No, I don't think they exist anymore.
Okay. Well, let's say Hasbro. Sure. Is that they doing it now? I don't know who's doing it.
Who knows?
But let's,
you want to print your own Rey and BB-8.
There you go. Do those companies survive when all we're buying from them is a plan to print them, and then how do they stop us from printing 1,000 of them and giving them all to our friends?
Trust.
Well, that, I mean, that the first question, do they survive? That's all a matter of how quickly and correctly they make the transition. And that is the same question as music and television and video and everything. The second part is, what is the intellectual property battle going to be like around plans for physical objects?
Yeah. See, that's when things get real weird. Like, digital objects is one thing. And when it comes to music, it's almost indiscernible. Like, the difference between the two is, it's almost, worse because they're more convenient when they're digital and it's not a piece of thing.
I can almost guarantee you that the first thing they'll try to do is put out locked up files that can only allow one printing off them. And there'll be a whole piracy epidemic for plans of popular toys. Like, I love the fact that, by the way, we're all like, well, of course, Michael, of course we'll be able in a few years to just print anything we want, which is kind of mind blowing when you think about it, right? To the like, so what will that mean?
Yeah. I mean, I really agree. I think I agree because the Moore's Law thing seems to kick in with almost, well, I mean, if it's too, it's so easy for my brain to go, remember laser printing and 24 pin dot matrix printing, and then how quickly that transitioned out. We got these inkjet things, and that went so fast. And we went from, you know, suddenly 1 year we're using garbage that's slow, and then 5 years later we're using these incredible, you know, awesome printers. It's easy for me to want to equate the two, but I know they're more complicated than that. I know there's nuance to what a 3D printer does versus what we've done on paper. So maybe it's not going to go as quick as I think it is, but I think I agree with you. It feels like we're heading there very fast. And every day there's some new thing. A guy's figured out how to prototype stuff out of paper and have it be full color. Another guy's figured out how to put resin in the small, tiny thing and build, you know, print anything in any color you want and more, you know, less expensive and faster. And when people say it took me 38 hours to print this one piece, Brian Ibbett printed a TARDIS. It took him some 80 something hours to print that freaking thing. There's going to come a day where that's like, they're going to laugh at that. They're going to say, really? Because I can print 8 TARDISes in about 5 minutes, you know? So that's where I think, I mean, I think things will not only just, you can make anything with any kind of materials, but moreover, we're just going to get so efficient with the processes that it's going to be faster and cheaper, and it's going to cost you more to buy filament than it does to buy a new printer, that kind of thing, just like we are with real printers now. Anyway, any other thoughts? What do you think, Jason?
I think 3D printing is going to get to the point where, I mean, it's not just going to be, you know, plastic toys or anything. I think we're going to get to the point where we're going to be able to take someone's DNA and be able to print out organs and missing limbs and things like that. And me personally, I'm waiting on a food printer so I can order a pizza from Domino's and have it start printing right there in front of me.
That pizza.
You know, I don't have to leave the house and wait on anybody.
It would really be great, wouldn't it? I mean, but see, that's the thing is none of us are going to be chefs. Well, I shouldn't say this. Some of us are just not chefs. Think of this as like the food industry. If you two really wanted to and you're great chefs, you could go to the store, buy all the stuff you need and make this incredible gourmet meal for yourselves. Some people, though, would rather just have that done for them. So they go to restaurants. Well, what's the difference between that and the BB-8 I buy, you know, that I want to have pre-made for me or making my own stuff? So won't there always be a market, Tom, for things that are someone else went all through the work to do and you didn't have to lift a finger? It feels like maybe.
Yes and no. I don't think it's because of the restaurant aspect of it, because if 3D printers get as good as Michael's suggesting, it will be much easier for you to go over and say, print BB-8 and BB-8 comes out perfect and you didn't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. That's like printing food, right?
Yeah.
Print me a burger, same thing. I don't have to cook it. I don't have to make it. I don't have to buy any ingredients for it other than the supplies for the thing.
Yeah.
I think that, but I think you kind of hit on something where there will be always be a market for the handcrafted thing. Same as now, right? Mm-hmm. You go to a craft fair and you find this guy that makes these amazing clocks. Well, sure, you can go down to Walmart and buy a perfectly decent clock, but you like the craftsmanship or the way it's made and something unique. So I think that kind of thing might survive.
Yeah. I mean, clearly there's still a market for vinyl. It's the same idea. Yeah, why not? But I think I agree with Michael. It's going to be quick. It's going to be crazy. Before we move out, though, Jason, you had a little prediction of your own. Do you want to share that with us? What'd you have?
Yeah, I was thinking in the next 5 to 10 years that VR technology is going to be so good that we're going to see a new level of addiction in people that is going to make, you know, Warcraft addiction look like child's play.
Yeah, so I actually have real questions about all of that, or you know, where it all ends up. But if you're telling me that I can escape to a place that feels better than where I am now, not that I'm feeling in a bad way, but you know what I mean? That's a big draw, man. Like, I realize it's one of those like sci-fi scare things where it's like, well, we don't know, and computers and this and that, but it does seem like it has potential anyway to be this thing that we get into that we're like, whoa. Now I know they've always said that about TV. They said it about radio. They say it about movies and video games. They say it about everything whenever those things come around. Comic books, you name it. this just feels different to me. Now, maybe it's because I'm in my 40s and it is, you know, now I'm looking at it from that perspective of all the old guys that came before me that were worried about my intake of Saturday morning cartoons. And now I'm looking at it as a parent going, oh, I don't know if I want my kid sitting on that all day.
Sure, so. There were pianos when I was young, but these moving pictures are different.
I mean, because I'm jazzed about VR, but I also know that I'm going to have a problem. Like, I know that if I really get into whatever... I was playing Tomb Raider today, and the new Tomb Raider on PC, and it's a really pretty game. And there are these ice caves in this one place I'm at that are unbelievable, and it hit me while I was playing it. Man, if I was in a VR thing and this is where I was at, I wouldn't leave. It's just too cool in here.
Mm-hmm. So, you say that, but you would leave.
Yeah, I'd have to though, right? Because I gotta
into
somebody's
your cold, dark world that is not as nice as the VR world.
Well, I mean, that's the theory behind Ready Player One, really. That
right.
It's better to be in your little pod than it is to be in the real world. Although I guess, you know, I mean, that's a cautionary tale. It's science fiction. We do this all the time with our science fiction, but I don't know. Time will tell, but it's an interesting prediction. I guess that's the point of this.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong, Jason. I think, like everything, there will be a certain small slice of people that will have problems with it. And if I've learned anything from Wendy Dunford, it's been that this is, you know, this can be a real problem for people. Yeah. And that we will, as a society, have to figure out a new way of dealing with a new problem. But I also don't think that because you're right, that means that, you know, VR will be dangerous for most people. And I think most of us, as enticing as it will be, like everything, will start to get used to it and see the pixels and see the flaws and say, well, it isn't quite the same as the real, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I await the day when resolution and replication becomes so big that we can't tell it from the real world. In fact, there's a 20% chance we're living in that right now. But until that day, there's always going to be like, well, I can't actually reach out and feel the wall. Like, we'll always find something that isn't as good as the real world and whatever we're using.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but there are people dying sitting at their computers playing, you know, Warcraft and shooters and stuff for like 48, 72 straight hours. Imagine people that are in a virtual environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Yeah. But I mean,
some,
it's...
Some people
it's
just
how
can't
many
handle
people.
It.
How yeah. many people, right? That's yeah. that's the question.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the number of people dying from Warcraft is... One or two?
Yeah, it pales. Like, yeah, the guys that die in like Korean, what do you call it? The internet cafes and they're playing StarCraft at all hours of the night and they die of starvation or whatever. They're such outliers that I totally agree with you, Tom, on that point. But we are going to have those. Here's what I guarantee is going to happen. As soon as this hits and it starts to take on a critical mass of people buying these things and having these experiences, whether it be through mobile gaming, PCs, whatever, there will start to be stories like that about a guy who let his kid right. starve or something or neglected his children. Kid went out and got hit by a car while he was couldn't get out of his VR world. That stuff will happen. And like always, there'll be these small cases that is not indicative of a larger population, but it'll still be like this. I don't know. It's still going to create all kinds of freak out and politicians having cows about it. And we can only tuck our head between our legs and hope for the best. Nice predictions, guys. I think this stuff is awesome. If you have your own prediction at home, you can always email those to us. Where? Oh, I know where. How about this? At currentgeek@gmail.com, where we get all kinds of feedback. One of them is this email from Peter. Before we close things out, Peter says this. Hey, guys, how come all these shows keep getting revived on streaming channels and we have not yet heard a thing about Firefly coming back? What a rip. Take your Gilmore Girls and shove it.
Oh, now, don't go hating on the Gilmore Girls just because we haven't got Firefly. That's not fair.
No, it's not. My wife is so excited about the Gilmore Girls coming back that I cannot rob her of that excitement. But Tom, why don't we ever hear about Firefly? I mean, there's always, you know, people asking, but no one's ever hinted
at it.
Well,
let me tell you, Scott, starting this fall. No, I don't know. he asked me like I have an idea. My guess is that it's probably, and I don't even know this, it's probably co-owned by Fox and Joss Whedon's production company, and those two don't get along, and they both would have to get along to put Firefly back on television, and they just haven't figured out how to come to an agreement about how to do it.
I think the money,
you know what's great, though,
what's
is that Nathan Fillion still is like all about Firefly. In fact, just before the show, I was going through Twitter and he had retweeted something from a fan and and the fan had said, "Oh, there's nothing better than marathoning through Firefly." And he replied, "Except for maybe a season two."
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, like he's ready, right? And it cracks me up every time. Yes. Yeah.
They've all shown interest. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that would be the other thing is getting their schedules together. But I don't think there's any of them who would refuse to do it if they could make it happen.
Well, you don't have to worry about Wash and Bishop.
Spoilers.
You know that old joke? Have you heard this joke? It's kind of a spoiler, but it's 10 years ago. I'm going to tell you this joke. You ready for this?
Yeah.
You probably heard it, but what do Reavers, is it Reapers? What are they in the, what are the bad guys?
Reavers.
What do Reavers, how do Reavers keep their spears clean?
I don't know, Scott. How do Reavers keep their spears clean?
They run them through the wash. Come on, that's all right. That's an okay joke. Unless you're really attached to that character, and that's kind of sad. Maybe too soon.
All right. Relief on the wind, Scott.
Yeah, I know. It was terrible.
So when are we going to get an A-Team revival? That's what I'm waiting
for.
We had the movie.
Yeah.
I want the original guys back.
Oh, you want a reunion.
You want the zombified corpse of George Peppard. Mr. T's still with us, so he'd be all right.
I'm Dirk Benedict.
TV Starbuck. Yeah, brilliant. Anyway, thank you for that email, Peter. Listen,
by the way, Dirk Benedict is not that old and doesn't talk.
No, not at all. You were going to get sued, so I'm glad you said that. Peter, thank you for your email. We'll take all kinds. Even if you don't like the Gilmore Girls, we'll still read your email. Send them to currentgeek@gmail.com. That is going to do it for our episode. Big, huge thanks to our guests. Let's circle around and give everybody a chance to talk about what they have going on. Michael, let's start with you. What's going on with your life? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter if you want. It's Mr. Rooney. It's MRROONI. More importantly than that, you should go buy 1Password because too many people use the same password for everything. And your bank and Twitter and Facebook should not all have the same password. Everything should have a strong, unique password. And 1Password can help you do that. So go get 1Password.
Yeah.
It's at 1Password.com. That's the number 1 password.
Yeah.
And get it.
And thank you, Apple, for putting functionality, although I haven't tested it. I assume that someone told me they did, but they put functionality back in the new Apple TV where you can type and paste and stuff.
You can now use the remote app on your iPhone to connect to the new Apple TV, which is great because, so if you use it with the iPad, like an iPad Air 2, you can multitask the remote app next to 1Password, and then you can copy and paste your passwords in for your Apple ID instead of having to type out that.
So much easier, yeah, because I never got it right every time I did it. It was just terrible.
You can have like those 23 character long mixed case special characters passwords and not worrying to have to remember them.
Yeah,
like you could be tortured at gunpoint and not know your passwords because you're like, I don't know, they're in 1Password.
Yeah, they just end up...
And that's really the point, right? Like, you shouldn't know your passwords. You should know 1Password and your master password to get into your vault.
That's right.
And but for the rest, yeah, you shouldn't know any of your passwords.
Yeah, just don't tell those guys with a gun to your head your 1Password. Don't do that.
What's your password? 1Password!
well done. It was great having you. And safe trip on the boat back to Florida.
Thank you much.
Jason, tell us what's going on with your cool project. Something pretty rad you got in the books there.
Yeah, I wrote a short film with my friends, comedian Wally Phelps and Jeremy London. And yes, that Jeremy London from Mallrats. And we wrote a short film called Monsters Anonymous. And we have a Kickstarter now, which you can find at helpthemonsters.com. And we're trying to raise $15,000 so we can make this thing. And we just started it a few days ago, so we have about 25 days left on it. If you get your tax return in and you want to put it on a movie, head on over and give us some of that money because we have some really good rewards. We have, you know, DVD copies of the movie. We even have levels where you can actually play a zombie in the movie. We have a level where you can actually have lines in the movie as a zombie. So we have a huge, I mean, just head over there and then see all the rewards we have and you'll find something that you like.
Nice. I really like Jeremy's work. He was one of my favorite characters in 1997's Leviathan. I'm a big fan of that movie. It's not a great movie, but he's really good in it. And anyway, that's awesome. Star-studded event. Go check it out and make sure.
Oh, and follow it on @therapy_monster on Twitter.
Nice. Very good. Well, thank you both for being here once again. It was fantastic having you guys on.
Thank you so much.
Tom Merritt, anything you have, anything else you have in parting, sir?
Well, coming up in our current geek crate will be a outtake, not an outtake, actually, more stories in the same universe as my book, Citadel 32. So if you'd like to read Citadel 32 before you get that, check out TomMerrittBooks.com. It is reduced to $2.99 on Kindle.
The Tom Merritt Expanded Universe.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I love
it. And then I'm going to declare the Expanded Universe Legends and come out with a whole bunch of new stuff.
I'm actually writing, it's funny you should bring this up, because I'm writing for the current geek box, I am writing a short story for the first time, also science fiction, that I'm super nervous about, but also excited about. And
I'm already in love with two of the characters in your short story.
Yeah, and Tom read it. I was super nervous to even have him because he's done this a bunch of times and I feel like a total noob, but he really gave me some great feedback and people so far seem to like it. So I'm jazzed to bring it to people. Don't forget to check that out at frogpants.cratejoy.com and get in on that. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. Andrew Allen did our theme music. Call us, leave us voicemails. We never get them, but if you send them, we'll play them. 801-471-0462. Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson on Twitter. Ace Detect for Tom on Twitter. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our Reddit page. Currentgeek@gmail.com and currentgeek.com for everything else. That's going to do it for us, for our guests, for Tom and I. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at an appeal to the Supreme Court regarding whether the Batmobile is protectable by copyright. DC Comics is fighting in court against a mechanic who was making and selling Batmobile replicas for customers. That decision has now been appealed this week to the Supreme Court to review several questions regarding copyright law. The Supreme Court grants certiorari in only a few cases a year, despite receiving hundreds of appeal requests like this one. So the first question is whether the court will take this case up for review. Some factors bend against such a review, including there being no split among the different circuit court of appeals that has been yet shown by the mechanic. The mechanic has argued that automobiles have been expressly excluded from what can be covered by copyright, but he cannot point to any decisions by other federal courts supporting this. When there's no split or inconsistent application of law, the Supreme Court hesitates to get involved unless there's an important legal question posed for clarification or resolution by the highest court in the land. Although not listed as one of the three questions directly posed to the Supreme Court for this appeal, the mechanic's attorneys imply that using copyright to protect automobile designs would unfairly deny what should be covered by design patents for only 14 years, from ever falling into the public domain. Remember that copyrights last 95 years for companies and life plus 70 years for individuals. So the appeal document argues that the Ninth Circuit decision, upholding the copyright in the Batmobile, would also result in Ford and other car companies covering their car designs for 95 years instead of the 14 years they are entitled to under patent law. That's really part of a larger question that started to gain more attention recently in IP law, as design patents with limited terms overlap in places with trade dress protection or copyright protection, both of which provide longer or potentially perpetual protection. Should innovators and creators be limited to only one bite at the IP apple, or can protection be extended by using the different types of intellectual property? There's interesting policy arguments supporting both sides, and it's precisely this type of broad-sweeping, important question that could lure the Supreme Court to take the case. Plus, there's the entertainment value of taking on a case about a fancy movie car like the Batmobile, as the appeal document includes a ton of pictures showing different iterations of this vehicle. The court decided the Spider-Man web shooter case last term, and had a bit of fun while doing it, so maybe it's DC's turn to see some legal spotlight. The bottom line is, even though the odds are very strongly against the Supreme Court debating the copyright merits of the Batmobile, there's a very interesting big legal question to answer if they do take on this challenge. Let's hope Spider-Man gets replaced with Batman on this year's Supreme Court docket. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.